advice for future leaders how to get started?
I would say think big, but start super small. In many cases, having spoken to many, many, many young people, you know, I work at universities, at schools, and all these things, people often get stuck at that first step. They have a big vision, but they don't know what to do. So what I would try and do is just take the tiniest step to get the ball rolling and just keep that going again and again and again. So that's one thing I'd say is think big, but start super small, tiniest step you can take. And secondly, is to really have fun. You know, you mentioned that our motto is less plastic, more fun. If you can find nice people, like fun people, try making an enjoyable experience, that will help set up things for the long term as well, and that'll keep you happy and engaged over the long run. So those are two pieces of advice, as well as take care of yourself. Make sure you don't burn out. I've seen enough burnout in the social and environmental space. So let's have fun and look after ourselves too, while caring for people, planet, and everything else is important.
Hi everyone, good morning and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I am JJ Walsh in Hiroshima, and I have the pleasure to have the wonderful Robin Lewis with me. Thank you so much for joining, Robin.
Good morning. Happy Earth Day. Thanks so much.
Happy Earth Day. What a perfect day to talk with you.
Absolutely.
All the amazing things that you're doing. Now, you are the co-founder of MyMizu, co-founder of Social Innovation Japan. You're also doing a lot of education as well as apps, the technical side, the people side, people, planet, profit, and balance. Where did it all come from? Can you remind us? Where was your inspiration? Is it as a kid? Something sparked in you?
I think one of the big turning points for me was the Great East Japan earthquake. So my mother's Japanese, my father's from the UK. And as a teenager, I had quite a strong desire to make a difference in the world. But I was really lacking confidence. I didn't know what to do, how to do it. I didn't really believe in my ability to make change. I studied business at university because I was told that if I studied business, that I would make it somehow, and I would be successful. And I had a good time. But I think the one thing that I was quite upset about was that it was always talking about maximizing profits and maximizing what's known as shareholder value. There wasn't really much conversation about how do we use marketing, investments, like consumer psychology, all these things to create positive change. So I left university kind of with this itch to use the skills that I'd learned at university to solve real world problems. And just as I was about to graduate, there was the Great East Japan earthquake in 2011. My mother's family is originally from the Tohoku area, from the Sendai area. And so that led me to fly from the UK back to Japan and volunteer in the areas affected by the tsunami. And then that led to a whole cascading kind of career in social impact, sustainability, green tech, and all of those things that you mentioned.
It comes from a need and personal experience, seeing where things are lacking, having your education in business, and then seeing, wait a second, this is only about profits? What about the people? What about the planet, right?
Gotcha.
I'm back teaching at University of Kirikushu once a week, and I'm so happy to see that they are offering refill stations there. That was one of your many projects. So that was exciting to see. Amazing. But teaching business, teaching marketing, and business case studies, of course, having that input of what is the sustainability side? What are businesses doing to balance these strategies? Now, of course, these are things you're dealing with every day with all your consulting and education, right?
Yeah, it's a constant balance to try and strike. And when I was at university, this is 15 years ago now, there was often a conversation about, do you pursue profit or purpose? And what I'm really happy to see is over the past 15 years, those two have very much merged in many cases. That doesn't mean you have to be a social entrepreneur. It means you can also be a social intrapreneur. You can join a big company. You can create new initiatives, create new products, new services that address problems. And when I look at Japan specifically, one of the things that I feel brings the most hope for the environment, for society, is the power of Japanese companies to actually do good, right? I'm very fortunate to speak to many passionate and driven people inside big companies who want to do exciting things and want to use their human capital, financial capital, their knowledge, all the things they have to drive meaningful change. And I think that's a really powerful thing, especially in Japan, where companies are so influential, so deeply rooted in history and culture and so on.
For sure. You've written some great articles on Medium. I'm a big fan. You've got Stop Calling Social Impact Organizations Nonprofit. So there's the kind of the core of what you're doing. It's not just about crowdfunding. It's not just about donations. It's moving beyond the nonprofit idea. Can you talk about that just a couple minutes?
Yeah. So my qualm with the term nonprofit is that the nonprofit industry is the only thing that you name by what it's not. You know, we don't say it's a very strange way of categorizing or labeling something. So rather than nonprofit, we can be for impact, we can be purpose aligned. I think rather than focusing what is not there, I think it's good to focus on what is there, what drives the organization. Similarly, I think one thing that's come up in several times in conversation has been that people often mistake or misunderstand the financial structure or the way that nonprofits are run. As a nonprofit, one of which I run, we still have to generate revenue. We still have to pay salaries and pay the office and pay the taxes and everything. So we can't just be fully reliant on donations and things. We have to be, you know, very innovative, and we still have to make money to make our ends meet. But of course, the end goal is to make impact and solve a tangible problem.
I'm just adding a link to your Medium page.
Oh, thank you.
I noticed you haven't written recently. You're very busy. you've had a baby. So that's a new big change. Are you feeling more motivated to work on all the great projects you're doing, more of a future focus now that you have this personal little person as an inspiration for the future? Has that changed at all?
You know, what's interesting is I don't think I fully formed or fully processed how much having our daughter has changed my outlook just yet. We're kind of still in the thick of it. She's about to become 4 months old. And so you can probably see from these bags under my eyes, I'm still very much in the, it's the best thing ever. I absolutely love it, but I haven't fully processed how it's impacted me. What I would say though, is that I think it's made me more aware of balance. In my 20s, I'm now in my, I guess, my latter half of my 30s. In my 20s, I was so driven to achieve things and make things and create things. And I still love that. But now, especially with the birth of our daughter, I feel a much stronger need to be very grounded to, you know, prioritize my family. That is my absolute priority right now, is to be there for my daughter, my partner, and be hopefully a good dad and a good husband as well. So I think still very much driven and still very, you know, I want to get things done and change things, but I also feel even stronger need to be here and be a good father as well.
And finding a balance, right? Work-life balance, making more time for yourself and your family, which is often a lot of people doing startups or especially passion-led businesses. Yeah. Burnout is a real situation, right?
Absolutely. And this is something I'm so passionate about, because as you say, especially within the social entrepreneur, activist or nonprofit space, people are so driven by what they do that they often forget that care starts at home, right? You have to have self-care, you have to sleep well, eat well, move well, all those things. And that can help you to make an impact, not just for the next year, but for the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years, because social change is not a sprint, it's a marathon. We need to be in the long term. So something I feel super passionate about. And one thing that we did, was it last year, that I want to do again very soon, is we organized a hiking day for social entrepreneurs and activists. And the idea was to slow down. Everything right now is about acceleration. Let's accelerate impact and scale and all these things, which is important. But I actually think it's more important to decelerate, to slow down sometimes and really just figure out, are we going in the right direction? Is this where we want to be? Where are we all heading? And to make sure that we're all aligned. So I loved doing that gathering of people. We went hiking in Kamakura, in the Kamakura Alps. And I want to do more of that stuff to help people slow down, to ultimately, you know, have a great impact and enjoy their time as well.
Absolutely. And then reconnecting to nature, being in nature, exactly, helps you feel refreshed and you got full of energy to go back to work, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah.
But turning off is hard, right? Like now we're connected so many ways. Do you have strategies like turning off all your devices at a certain time, or how do you do that?
This is something I struggle with a lot, I'm not going to lie. What I have been doing sometimes recently is not having my phone in my bedroom. So last year I did a 10-day intensive meditation retreat called Vipassana, which is pretty well known as one in Kyoto, one in Chiba. And one of the things that I loved most about that 10-day silent retreat, you can't speak to anyone, you can't make eye contact, you can't write, there's no reading, nothing. You're just meditating 10 hours a day. One of the things I loved about that is there was no phones, no technology, no smartwatches. And it was such a good chance to reconnect. It was very challenging. I got pretty bored, I'm not going to lie, but I loved the process and I loved that part of it.
That's awesome. Now, one of the great reasons to talk to you today is talking about 5 years of My Mizu. Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
And you just had a 5-year report in Japanese listing all the key things over the 5 years. It must feel amazing. Good job.
Well, thank you. No, you know, what's funny is that we started My Mizu as an experiment. You know, I guess the backstory, just to shed a bit of light here, is that we started Social Innovation Japan, which is the organization running My Mizu, the platform, in 2017. So we're actually approaching our 8th birthday as Social Innovation Japan. And originally, our idea was to bring people together and to basically create change with people. And that was one of our main goals. And so we started doing events, we started doing trainings, we started doing events at companies, like workshops and things as well. And then we had this need, this urge to start creating change around plastic waste, because Mariko and I, my co-founder and my partner, went to Okinawa. We saw so much waste, not just in Okinawa, it's all over the place. But we felt a real need, a real opportunity to make something that's creative using technology, but most importantly, that's co-created with people. You know, I mentioned, going back to my own story, that as a teenager, I was really low on confidence, even up to university. I had no, I felt like I had no agency over where I was going or what I was doing. And so one of my passions, one of my life goals now, is to work with people to help them be part of the solution and be an active member of the environmental and social solution as well. So that's why we started My Mizu back in 2019. And it was an experiment. We just thought there's an exciting opportunity. We went from idea to launch in about 2 months, 3 months, very quick. And now it's been over 5 years and we've done all these things, thanks to our community. So it's been a very, very rich, enriching and challenging sometimes 5 years, but we've absolutely loved it.
That's amazing. Let's talk about the top 8 metrics. So number of downloads, you've had 400,000 or more, 203,000 refill spots, 2,500 or more refill partners, 50 countries. Yeah. People who have been posting information on the spots, more than 4,500. Event speaker attendees, 50,000. Media coverage, 3,000. And social media, 20,000. Amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling how such a simple idea has gone so far. But I also think that the reason it traveled so far was because of the simplicity of the idea. One of the things I'm, again, passionate about is creating ways to make people understand and take action on quite complicated things. And when we talk about the climate crisis, for example, it is often quite technical and quite complicated. CO2 emissions, methane emissions, you know, sea level rise, all these things are very important, but also quite difficult and quite maybe far away for a lot of people. So our goal was, can we use the plastic bottle as an entry way, or like a, what do they call it? A gateway drug, a good way, a gateway drug to a more I guess, profound sustainable transition within people. So that was our initial thinking, was to use a plastic bottle as a hook and then work with people, create change together with our crowdsourced and co-created platform.
And it is such, it seems like such a simple, straightforward, no-brainer idea, but it's hard to get people to make the step. You've been working with municipalities, businesses, a lot of students, universities are starting to have refill stations. So coming at it from lots of different perspectives seems to be working well for the project. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, one of our core values, our core approaches is to work with as many different parts of society as possible. This is one of the things I'm most grateful for, is the fact that we work with schools, we work with universities, we work with a lot of city governments, we work with prefectural governments, including Kita Kyushu, which you just mentioned. We also work with a lot of big brands, from IKEA to Audi to Patagonia to all of our really valued strategic partners. We call these very valued companies that support our work. So we have this very broad range of partners, and that's also a key part of creating what we call systems change. If we want to change the system away from single use and really make the default a more sustainable option, we have to work with absolutely everyone. We cannot do it alone. So that's why we do that. And that's also probably part of the reason why MyMuso has again reached the distances that it has.
Do you find like, is one style of strategy seem to be working, or one style seems to be a big hurdle? Like, you did some great projects with Kobe. Kobe City seems really on board with the municipality trying to get refill spots. Kamioka in Kyoto. But then working with universities, making posters with students. Is there one way that it seems to drive the motivation to create refill spots or change the app? You've got any of one direction you found, this is a little bit harder than the other directions, or this is a little bit easier?
You know, one thing I would say is that I don't have a technical background, just to be clear. We have this MyMuso app. As you mentioned, it's been downloaded over 400,000 times now. We have many tens of thousands of people using it every month. I don't have a technical background. That's all done by our CTO, Laurie Kate, absolutely amazing individual who's been there from day zero. We have actually majority female, majority woman tech team as well, which is quite rare. We're super, super grateful for. We have a very talented tech team doing all of that stuff. My background is more in communications and more in storytelling. And I think from day zero, back in 2019, we invested lots of time, lots of energy into telling the story of why is this important. And we also made it fun. We chose to make it a positive, and rather than pushing a negative message like, hey, you know, we're facing this massive crisis, we have to do something, pulling with a more compelling and a positive vision of what's possible if we all work together. So to answer your question, what I'd say is that the investment in communications has been really important. And what's been so exciting about that is that we have now young people in universities who are literally making their own MyMuso posters and sticking them in their campuses. We have elementary school students in Okinawa, again, making their own like stickers, making their own materials, and going out into their local areas and speaking to the cafes and restaurants to try and get them to join. So we have people essentially taking ownership over MyMuso, which is kind of the whole point. This is not something that we made for you. It's something that we all make together. And seeing those bits of creativity of people making videos, stickers, posters. You know, funny story, I was driving in Okinawa in 2021 along this highway, and suddenly out of nowhere on the left-hand side of the car, quite a nice blue skies day, I saw a ginormous series of MyMuso flags. Like, you know those ginormous flags they have out of cafes? And I'd never seen this. And obviously, I didn't make it. So I was like, what is this? So I pulled over, went into the cafe and asked the owners. And they said, listen, we just really love the concept, the vision of MyMuso. And so we've just made all these flags, and we've plastered them all over the highway. And it's that kind of thing that I find so powerful and compelling, because when it's not driven by us anymore, when it's driven by the community, then I think that's how you get growth and impact as well.
That's amazing. Of course, MyMizu is a free app to use.
Yes. Yeah.
You do have some corporate sponsors who do collaborative work with you. But a lot of people might be wondering, like, how do you make a business from a free app? Can you touch on that just a little bit?
Sure. So we have what are called strategic partners, who are companies who support MyMizu annually, essentially similar to a sponsorship model. They can also promote their products. Many of them are water-related companies. So that's a natural fit. Secondly, we sell bottles as well. We do bottle sales, both individual MyMizu bottles, but also we sell, thank you very much for that, we also sell collaboration bottles. So, for example, with Uber Eats, with Johnson & Johnson, with various companies, we make these collaboration bottles and provide them to their teams and their people. Thirdly, we work with local governments, and there is a paid part of that where we're helping them to reduce plastic waste, which is a cost for them, and we're helping to promote their water infrastructure too. So we do get some budget from local governments. We have many individual donors who are extremely valuable for us, who support MyMizu on a monthly basis. Thank you so much for joining and for also sharing that as well. And we also have a lot of our work is with companies doing trainings, workshops, and all those things. So we also get revenue from that. So there's several different revenue streams, but it took a while to get there. It's a free platform. It's always hard to monetize things. And we also didn't want to have random crypto ads and, you know, these advertisements in the app. So we've had to be creative, but we've made it work for now. One of the things, we also get grants as a philanthropic, as a social venture. We're allowed both grants, and we can do kind of consulting and work for companies. And so one of our big grants this year was from Google, which has really supported our development of the app and so on. So we have several revenue streams, and they're the key ones.
That's awesome. That I know that you did crowdfunding in the beginning.
Yes.
Having creating revenue streams over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Where do you see MyMizu in the next 5 years? Any big vision forward?
Yeah. I mean, what's really exciting now is I see two frontiers. One is, it's not just about plastic waste now. What we're doing is we're building a part of the social infrastructure in Japan and other countries. Water is so critical, not just for reducing plastic waste with all these refill stations. It's also really important for public health during summer. As you know, it gets unbelievably hot during summer, and every year it's getting even hotter. So we see a big opportunity to use the MyMizu social infrastructure to solve a big public health problem, which is people collapsing and in some tragic cases, dying from dehydration and heat stroke in the summer. So we are now really turning towards, how do we leverage this infrastructure that we've built together to solve that problem? That's one. Secondly, with the second frontier is inbound tourism. This is, I know, another thing that you're very knowledgeable about. There's been a huge boom recently, and we have a lot of travelers using MyMizu, which I'm super happy about. And what's great about that is that, thanks to people like you, Joy, you've been promoting MyMizu through your various channels for many years. People find out about MyMizu. They use it while they're in Japan. They contribute, and then they take it back. So we now have people across 50 countries adding information, adding data, adding photos, and using the platform. So the idea is that we will eventually, hopefully, expand across the world and continue to make this social infrastructure, which sounds very, you know, boring, this social infrastructure, but it's just a way to create a new social system to address a serious environmental and social problem as well.
It's creating a positive community.
Exactly.
And I'm adding places to refill when I do guided tours. I'm adding, you know, special stickers. You guys need a mascot. I think you need a MyMizu mascot. You need to create something cute, and then we know that captures attention in Japan too, right?
Absolutely. That's on the to-do list for year 6 and 7, I think.
Yeah, right? But, you know, adding these things to tourism, definitely a lot of inbound travelers are bringing their bottles.
Yeah.
And then I'm learning which hotels are offering refill bottles. Some of the cruise ships are giving their guests refill bottles to go when they visit locations.
Yeah.
That's awesome, right? That's great. So those would be great collaborators for my using the MyMizu app as well. Yeah. I just read in the newspaper today that the government is starting to give alerts when there's a problem with the heat. Heat stroke is real. And then collaborating in that way with or suggesting MyMizu.
Yeah.
Why not have it in all stations? I always ask about it at every information center. Where can I fill up?
Yeah.
And 5 years ago, people would say, go fill up in the toilet. And I was like, no. And then recently, they're like, shall I fill up for you? Yeah. And that's a step in the right direction. But having a refill station is so important because what we're seeing in the hotter months, all the drink machines are sold out.
Yeah.
So if you're not having another option, the only option is to buy a drink.
Yeah.
That's a health issue. Yeah. You're going to have a lot more health issues, right?
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the filling the bottle in the toilet. One of the reasons I started MyMizu was because as a student, I did a year abroad in Japan at a university in Tokyo, and I had that exact challenge. I had this bottle that was like so gross because I've been using it for years and years and years, and there was nowhere to refill. So my go-to move was to go to 7-Eleven or Lawson or Family Mart or wherever and just pretend to buy something. I'd like walk in, I'd like look at things, like, oh, this looks really nice. And I'd just sneak off into the toilet and refill. But the sinks are also not well designed for that. So without getting too into the details, I had to do a lot of creative moves to refill my bottle in the toilet. And that's why, you know, if that's the only option, it's or a plastic bottle, then there has to be a better option. That's why we started MyMizu. Also, interestingly, going back to Japan and Japanese history, when you look at the Edo period of Japan, it was such a circular and environmentally friendly time here. People often say, you know, sustainability is more advanced in Western countries and all these things. I would actually argue that Japan is one of the most one of the societies where sustainability is ingrained the deepest. When you look at Satoyama, like Satoumi, Mottainai, the Edo period also had a lot of circularity. For example, even human waste used to be captured and used as fertilizer on fields, right? Everything was used and had a second life. So going back to water, what's so interesting is when you speak to people in their, let's say, 60s or 70s or sometimes younger, people will say that, yeah, water used to be for everyone. It used to be a public good. You know, it was if everyone was sharing. And then obviously we had privatization and various, you know, beverage companies making big moves and making lots of money, which is unfortunately part of the challenge. And now we want to go back and we say, look, it should be everyone's thing. Water is a human right in many cases, and we want to kind of return it to the people through people power, through co-creation, through community. That's what we're doing.
Absolutely. And you've written a great article about Sampo Yoshi.
Yeah.
And the idea of businesses doing, as part of the business, doing community service. And this fits in so beautifully with Social Innovation Japan, but of course MyMizu as well. That a business, not only, I love talking about this with visitors, how a lot of businesses, or you see a rickshaw business, they go and clean Miyajima Island, the route. They'll pick up trash before they start business for that day. And a lot of businesses do that. So offering free water, which should be a human right, clean water, which is wonderful. In Hiroshima, we have wonderful sake. So we have wonderful water, like most of Japan. Tap water is brilliant, right?
Yeah.
So adding that as part of your business strategy, doing good for the customer, but also doing good for the community, right?
One of my favorite stories, having spoken to many of what we call refill partners. Refill partners are the cafes, the shops, the restaurants that join our network. There was one case where a young boy, I think he was maybe 5 or 6, maybe a bit older, used to walk to school by himself. and the mother or father would say bye-bye, and then they would walk by themselves to school, and they'd walk back home afterwards. And during the summer season, it got quite hot, so they were worried about what to do with this boy and while he was walking on the way to school. And so I think it was the mother said, hey, there's this Miami's a spot, a cafe on your way to school. So why don't you go in there? If you get thirsty, you can refill your bottle and come home and stay hydrated. And so apparently every day during summer, during the school period, this boy would go into the cafe, you know, tiny little boy would be like, hey, can I have some water, please? And the cafe owners absolutely loved it, because it's a small thing to do, but it's so profound in terms of what it means for community, what it means for well-being, for collective well-being as well, to be able to look out for each other through the means of water. So there's a great thing with water is that it does connect people in many ways, and that's also a really important part of what we do, is to create more community cohesion through this kind of service.
That's awesome. I've had the similar interactions in Patagonia.
Yeah.
And Muji. Yeah. Because those are businesses in Japan that regularly offer free water refills for anyone who walks in.
Yeah.
And I do it as part of my guiding. Oh, I got a refill, you know, and then my guests would do it too. But often you'll see elderly people from the community who come and refill, and the staff are like, please have a seat, sit down. And it's a way to also check up on how they're doing and talk with them. We're having a big problem in Japan with people dying alone at home. And these are people who are kind of dropping out of this community cohesion.
Yeah.
And then, like you talked about, getting kids to drop in on the way to school or the way home, and having that extra connection for kids too. So on both sides of people in groups who are kind of falling out of this community connection, which is so strong, or used to be, in most of Japan, right?
No, that's exactly it. And I think one exciting area of opportunity that we see is that the Ministry of Environment is actually setting up what's known as cooling shelters during the summer. And those who are most vulnerable in many cases to heat stroke and dehydration are kids and the elderly, right? In many cases. So the idea is to set up these spaces that are air conditioned, that have water, that you can sit down, you can have a quick chat with someone when it's really hot. And we want to get Miami Zoo, we want to actually get all those cooling shelters on Miami Zoo and provide Miami Zoo materials and things too, because again, it's such a big opportunity, and ultimately we're not just reducing plastic, we're also saving lives in some cases too.
Absolutely. Let's talk for a minute about reducing plastic though, because that is a wonderful part of the Miami Zoo philosophy. You wrote a great article about 7 myths about plastic in Japan, 7 surprising facts about plastic in Japan. Can you walk through us? I'll show it on the screen. You can walk through some of the points.
This I wrote a while ago, so I'm a little bit rusty, but I know that the key points. This, just to give a bit of backstory, I received a strawberry, which you can see in this photo. This photo went semi-viral, by the way, which I found quite interesting. There is one strawberry, obviously quite expensive, very tasty, mind you, very tasty. But it was covered, I think, in 6 pieces of plastic for one strawberry. And so I was writing about how receiving the strawberry led me down this path of looking into plastic waste, because oftentimes we say that if you just throw it in the recycling bin, then it gets recycled. The big myth, the number one thing that we like to discuss is that in many cases recycling is not what we imagine. There's several types of recycling, but most of it, the majority, over 50% in Japan, is burnt, incinerated through a process called thermal recycling or energy recovery. The idea is that you're burning plastic and then using that heat energy to do things like heat pools and use for in other ways. So the number one myth, or the thing that I think is most misunderstood, is that if you throw something in the recycling bin, it comes back to life in something. In many cases, it doesn't. That's not to say that recycling is not important. It is an important part of the solution, but it is also the last resort, right?
reduce, reuse, recycle, the 3 R's. There's also 7 R's, 10 R's now, depending on who you speak to, but always the last resort is recycling. So if we can reduce or reuse or refuse, which is a really important refusing first, that's much more impactful than throwing it in the recycling bin. We also export a lot of plastic waste to other countries. And so it is connected in many ways to human rights, because we export the waste that we can't handle to other countries, mainly in Southeast Asia, where they are, in some cases, there've been quite strong documentation of being dumped in marginalized communities and burnt and leading to a lot of health problems like respiratory issues and so on. So there are many issues around plastic waste, but the number one thing is to reduce from the very source and recycle as a last resort.
Isn't that crazy that highly technologically advanced, efficient countries like Japan, who is so good at managing all the waste, we're still exporting some of the plastics and creating problems in other parts of Asia. And it's a human rights issue, but it's also, as we have a new unsteady world order, it's also creating social problems, which will create issues of conflict in the future. We want to be better, right?
Exactly.
We want to rise above the status quo and just take care of our own trash.
Exactly.
And I think this is something a lot of people don't know still.
And I think since our last conversation several years ago, what I've been really excited about is seeing how many new circular products and systems there are. Just to name a few, like Meglu, the reusable containers, the reusable takeout container system. There's lots of other, like reusable cups for coffee. And there's so many reusable systems now that are focusing on reduction, which is the most powerful thing to do. And it's been really cool to see so many new ideas and creations in this past few years, focusing on this issue.
And as an individual user, I'm always looking for new ways to cut down on plastic packaging.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people visit and they feel awful having to buy so much plastic, every time they shop at a convenience store, they have a big pile of plastic.
Yeah.
So they feel really uncomfortable about this. They love traveling in Japan, but this is a hard situation for a lot of travelers who are coming from places that don't use quite as much plastic now, right? It's changed a bit.
Absolutely. I think one powerful thing that people can do is, of course, you know, it's the obvious ones like carry your own reusables, chopsticks, bags, bottles, all this stuff. That's you know, that's very clear. But one thing that I think is not so talked about is feedback. And I mean positive feedback. When you go to a cafe or a restaurant or shop and they have, let's say, paper straws or metal or whatever it is, in many cases, that's actually more expensive for the cafe owners. And so if you just say one thing, which is, hey, I love what you've done here. I love the metal straws. I love the sustainable materials you're using. It means a lot to, I think, cafe owners and restaurant owners and so on. So that's one simple thing we can do, is provide positive feedback and encourage them and show them that their efforts are being appreciated as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Plastic bags, still an issue. Now, one of the places you're collaborating with is Kameoka in Kyoto. They actually banned plastic bags. Are they the only place in Japan to ban plastic bags yet?
You know, I'm not sure what other places have. What happened a couple of years ago was that there's now a mandatory plastic bag charge for most retailers and supermarkets or convenience stores. So now you have to pay usually 3 yen or 5 yen for a plastic bag, similar to many other countries, including the UK as well. So there's been some legislative change, but they're still very prevalent. And if you go along the coastline, in many cases, you'll see plastic bags and bottles and all kinds of things too.
Yeah. You also organize beach cleanups. We do as well. Yeah. Plastic bags, still something you see a lot of. I on tours, especially, a lot of people like to visit bakeries. Japanese bakeries are amazing, right? But I'm asking the staff every time a group comes in with me, can we just have it on the tray and we're going to eat it here? You know, because even those little plastic bags, which they give as a free service, that's unnecessary, because we're going to eat it right now. you know? So even asking politely in that way, that can help reduce. And hopefully that's getting back to the manager. Oh, maybe we'll offer a tray if people are eating here. You know, you never know what influence your positive comments can have on a business, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have a lot of things to say, but I'll just say yeah to that 100%.
Pet bottles are really the only choice right now in Japan for most drink machines. Mm. And that's really depressing to see because it's so few are actually recycled and reused in any way once they're recycled. Most, like you said, are burned. This is a crazy statistic. I'm losing my language here. Sorry. 183 pet bottles per year per person in Japan.
Yeah, that may have changed. This article was a few years old, but there are several, I believe it's 23 billion now every year of plastic bottles being used in Japan, just Japan as well. What I'd say, pet bottles, is actually the recycling rate is relatively high, but there is a percentage around, I think between 10 and 15% that's not recycled. So while there is a very high recycling rate of plastic bottles, it's still like the concept is still really important. How do we reuse? Because people don't want necessarily the packaging, they want the inside. And there's a lot of beverage companies now who are trialing or looking at machines that can refill for reusable bottles. And so that's a really exciting new thing. That's I know a lot of beverage companies are working on too.
Well, you were collaborating with Kirin, and I got really excited that we might see refill drink machines in the future. Is that something that's possible? That would be great to see.
There is another company that we're working with who was doing a pilot program for a vending machine that was specifically for reusables. Yeah, watch this space in terms of announcements and things, but that is on the way. What I would say is that there is a company who has released a machine that washes reusable bottles, which is very exciting because that's a problem that we heard from a lot of people, is that they use their reusables, but then there's no place to wash them in many cases. And so now, for example, I believe it's the Osaka Expo site, there is actually reusable bottle machine that washes your bottle for you as well. So there's a lot of new innovations and creations coming along.
That's great. And that's actually a traditional machine that a lot of the soy sauce makers, sake makers, if it was a big bottle, they have, if you ever visit one of these breweries, they have these old factory machines that rewash and reuse the bottles. So it does exist. We could bring that back.
Yeah.
Another thing is, if you ever see the Coke machines, the old style Coke machines with the glass bottle, you drink it there, you leave it there, it's washed and reused. Why not bring that back? That was working, you know?
Well, interestingly, I've seen machines like that at conferences. At big conferences, they have those machines now that are very fancy and nice looking, but they haven't been scaled to a bigger level with more availability. So there are some in conferences. It's a good thing.
That's great to see. And then trash areas. A lot of visitors comment how there's no trash cans anywhere.
Yeah.
And I often talk about, well, this is a labor crunch issue, also a tidiness issue. Yeah. If you can't keep emptying the trash cans, then overflowing trash can is worse than no trash can, right?
Yeah.
So having places where people can, even after buying something, throw it away, it's a hassle to carry around your trash. So that's another advantage of MyMizu. You don't create any trash, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it makes it easier. And the more refill points we have, the easier it is for everyone because there's just more options for people too. So,
absolutely. And then you're talking here about how China stopped accepting plastic waste from other countries. But there are still even less developed countries in Asia which are accepting it. You can understand it's a lot of money to turn away. But it's creating toxic areas where they live, right?
In some cases, yeah. And there is some new legislation around plastic waste and exports and moving them between countries.
So things are changing, but it's the key issue is still that we are over reliant on single use. And I'm not saying it's not also quite as easy to say like plastic is the absolute devil. There are actually many environmental use cases for plastic. It's just the overconsumption, the over reliance that's the challenge. And they can be easily substituted in many cases with much more sustainable options like Miamizu, like Meglu, like Aikasa. There's so many other options out there.
Now, talking about the facilities themselves, that's often an argument I hear from people in Japan that burning the plastic is creating energy. Have you heard this argument? You want to respond to that?
That's thermal recycling, where you're using the plastic waste, you're burning it, and then you're using that heat energy in most cases to power other things and to heat up pools and all these things. But again, there's a lot of other ways to burn. So I think the key thing is just addressing the over-reliance on plastic, on single-use plastic. And you mentioned the soy sauce containers. Like back in, you know, my mother's generation, they would go around with soy sauce bottles to the soy sauce shop and get it refilled, right? So as I mentioned, Japan has a very strong understanding, and it's deeply ingrained in the society that there is a sustainable way to live. But for many reasons, for economic growth reasons, for in the post-war period, there was a huge push for consumption, and many other influences have led to this much more disposable and single-use culture. But I'm again full of hope, because I see so many new inventions, new creations, and a lot more awareness too of people making better decisions or more environmentally friendly decisions every day.
For sure. We have a wonderful, beautiful museum of garbage incinerator facility in Hiroshima. If you ever come down, we'll go and walk through together. It's amazing, beautiful design, and it doesn't smell, it doesn't make noise, but it's burning all of the city's trash of a million people, and a lot of it has plastic inside. So you have to use energy to make the fire. Of course, the fire makes some energy, but then what happens with the ash? Well, because it has plastic in it, you can't put it back to nature. Yeah. So that's another issue. And the idea of the circular, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do we source it? And then what happens to the end product?
Yeah.
Those are often not thought about either, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, in Tokyo, you're running out of space, I heard, for landfill, right? So no landfill space is putting more pressure on these incinerators, but also landfill areas, right?
Yeah. So that's, it all points to the same direction, that we need to address overconsumption, which is also quite challenging because our current economic model is geared towards consuming, you know, GDP growth, economic growth as the key indicator. And there is now a lot more conversation around, is there a healthier way to measure the success of a society more than GDP? And there's some talk about degrowth and all these other things, But it's a challenge because the fundamentals are still relatively extractive and not super environmentally friendly in many ways, because we do live on a finite planet, but we're aiming for this infinite growth of the economy.
For sure. I love your motto, less plastic, more fun. It's not just about plastic, but that's like a main driver of using Miamizu and promoting it, right?
Exactly, yeah. And the fun part is so important because when we launched back in 2019, we didn't really see that many engaging and positive options for people. So we thought, can we make it fun? Can we make it enjoyable? Can we organize fun events and get people to feel like they're participating in a game while saving plastic waste, reducing CO2 emissions, saving money as well for themselves? So that was a really important part of what we started with. And we've continued doing that. We've done collaborations with Nike, for example, where we did an integration between the Nike Run Club app and Miamizu. And we had a campaign where over the course of a month, the more you ran, the more you clocked your kilometers, your running miles, the more Miamizu and Nike water points we would increase, we would install across Tokyo. So the idea was to make it fun, to make it enjoyable. To integrate things like arts, sports, other cultural events into this conversation, because that's how you can really
get people who might not think about this on a daily basis to be involved and part of the solution.
That's awesome. You do a lot of campus activities, education. What's happening here with the campus card order activity?
So I believe this is the Climate Fresque workshop, which is a very popular, originally French workshop to help people understand the causes of the climate crisis and what they can do to tackle it. I think that was from our Campus Changemakers Summit. So every year we organize an event for students to come together to brainstorm ways to create more green and environmental campuses. The reason we did this was because we had a lot of emails and people reaching out to us from different universities and different high schools saying they want to reduce waste, they want to increase water points, they want to help make their campus more circular. And so we thought, rather than doing one-on-ones, you know, helping everyone at once, why not bring the whole everyone together in one place and brainstorm and create solutions together? So that was the reason why we started doing the Campus Changemakers Summit. And that's one of our real key initiatives for young people that we do.
That's awesome. Now, you have some other exciting new events coming up through Social Innovation Japan. Yeah. Do you want to talk about your Helena Powers?
Yeah, so this is an exciting new program. And it's kind of going back to full circle. Because I mentioned that the reason we launched Social Innovation Japan was to bring people together and to make solutions to environmental problems and social problems together. So we launched Helena Powers on International Women's Day this year. And the program is a women's entrepreneurship support program where over the course of 6 weeks, it's quite intense. We do essentially a process to help people go from idea to launch within 6 weeks. It's in partnership with Helena Rubinstein and L'Oreal. And we've had quite a few applicants. This is amazing. We had many applicants, and we're in the process of choosing the final cohort. But it's super exciting. And as I say, it's going full circle for us because we had a lot of people asking us to help launch their ideas. And now this is a way to get everyone together and, again, create solutions together too.
That's so good. I love your Manals Suck article. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
As a woman forward man,
yeah,
promoting women in work in Japan and equal pay, equal opportunities, it's really an important part of your brand, of course, as being a partner, your co-founder, yeah, co-partner in many ways. It's amazing to see, Robin. You're doing great work there.
Maybe I can just elaborate on that first.
Yes, please.
So since I think 2019 or 20, I've had a no Manal policy. Manal is all male panel. And you can see from the photo there that a lot of conferences and events have, in many cases, panel discussions that are all men attending or speaking. And I noticed that a lot since 2019 and before then at major international conferences, but also smaller events too. And so I decided that, well, actually I've accidentally taken part in a couple of Manals where I turned up at the venue and I realized, oh wow, there's like seven guys on the stage. And so having made that mistake myself because of lack of due diligence, I decided to make a no Manal policy where myself and team members too will not generally take part in a panel discussion if there's not representation. Of course, gender is just one lens. There's many other lenses of which we can talk about diversity, but it's more of a symbolic policy to get people to understand that you can't have six guys on a stage talking about sustainable societies and all these things because we're missing at least 50% of the population. So that's the no Manal policy. And I'd encourage other people, other guys, or anyone to take that kind of policy on and be vocal about it as well, because it's super important.
That's awesome. I have, when I reach out to people to talk about things on the show, quite often I am very impressed when I contact a man who's like the official head, yeah, and he says, how about talking to this woman who's on our team and she's amazing? And I was like, yes, Yes, happy, happy, happy. Because even doing the talk show, I try to have a balance, 50% or 51% if I can, because that's the actual representation.
Absolutely.
But it's really hard. The status quo is men as leaders, men as experts, men in government, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, there's
one. What you're doing is important.
There's one website. I think it's, is it She Speaks? There's a website in Japan that is specifically for women speakers, and it was set up by a friend of mine. I can't remember the exact name.
I think it's the woman who set up Code Chrysalis, which you also have worked with.
Jan was started it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like completely blanking on the name, but it's a really good platform to find women speakers as well.
Yeah, I'll put the link below. I'll seek it out.
Thank you.
Robin, we've talked about a lot. We've only got a few minutes left. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to say? We'll put you on the spot there.
There's a lot to say. Well, first of all, it's Earth Day. So maybe we can wrap up with some action points and maybe a call to action for us as Miamese. So I'll start with a call to action. We have a few events coming up. One is the Responsible Marché in the Impact Hub Tokyo. So we'll have a booth there. I'm again blanking on the date, but I think it's in May, it's a weekend in May. So please come along to that. It's a whole market full of sustainable and environmental products and companies that are showcasing their materials in Impact Hub Tokyo. So we'll be there. And then, we're also, I think we'll be hiring again soon. So if I think we're going to be looking for a operations support or admin role. So please follow our social media and stay tuned. If anyone would like to connect with me, please find me on LinkedIn. It's Robin Takashi Lewis. Feel free to reach out and be super happy to connect. And in terms of things we can do, one thing that I think is super important and I mentioned before is also looking after ourselves, and this connection between well-being and sustainability is increasingly being talked about, but I think there needs to be a bit more conversation about that. We need to be financially well, we need to be spiritually well, physically well, mentally well. So one thing that I try and do, having borrowed this from another much wiser friend than me, is to try and move well, eat well, sleep well, connect well every day in some form, make sure the base is there. And then that helps me, sets me up nicely to take on environmental problems, social problems, many of which are, there's quite a few big ups and downs and things. Because as I mentioned, I really believe that social change is not a sprint, it's a marathon. We have to be in it for the long term. So please look after yourself, be compassionate, and have an amazing Earth Day. On top of all the other things that we can do, from reducing plastic to shifting our banks, right? The banks that we use in many cases have quite strong footprints with the fossil fuel industry. Your investments, the choices that we make at the supermarket, all these things are super important. But I think the key thing is also to look after yourself and be compassionate so that we can be in it for the long haul.
That's awesome. Also, you're such a leader, Robin. You must get and working with young people all the time. What advice would you give for future leaders, people who are passionate about helping the environment, helping their community? Any advice for future leaders, how to get started?
I would say think big, but start super small. In many cases, having spoken to many, many, many young people, I work at universities, at schools, all these things. People often get stuck at that first step. They have a big vision, but they don't know what to do. So what I would try and do is just take the tiniest step to get the ball rolling and just keep that going again and again and again. So that's one thing I'd say is think big, but start super small, tiniest step you can take. And secondly, is to really have fun. You mentioned that our motto is less plastic, more fun. If you can find nice people, like fun people, try making an enjoyable experience, that will help set up things for the long term as well, and that'll keep you happy and engaged over the long run. So those are two pieces of advice, as well as take care of yourself. Make sure you don't burn out. I've seen enough burnout in the social and environmental space. So let's have fun and look after ourselves too, while caring for
people, planet, and everything else is important.
That's awesome. And of course, be part of the community. Yep. Join the cleanup events, join as a member of MyMizu, go to Social Innovation Japan events. You can network, you can really create a stronger community, which helps you launch your ideas too.
Exactly.
These people are happy to support you, right?
Yeah, but yeah, please, if anyone's interested in MyMizu, please check out our website, our social media. We have all the info there. And we're hopefully going to take over the world with free and plastic-free water. So please join us as well.
That's awesome. Less plastic, more fun. Join your community, connect, think positive. We need optimism to have hope, to have better innovation, right?
Absolutely. Very much so.
Thank you so much, Robin. That was great talking with you.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day, everyone.
Happy Earth Day. Take care, everyone. See you next time.
Bye-bye.